So yes, I'm Craig Van Kempen. Not much of a lecturer. I'm more of a facilitator, conversationalist. So there's going to be an activity just to warn folks. You might have something to do with index cards and pens you found on your chairs if you're up here. If not, we can pass them back. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the play, what I've learned as a scholar of the play, as well as what I've learned as a health educator and social worker working with adolescents in today's society. So it's a great play, it's very relevant, and we'll learn a lot about that. So a little bit about me, German and theater from the U of M's Residential College. I studied abroad at the University of Freiburg and the Music and Theater Conservatory of Rostock in Germany. Got a chance to see Spring Awakening in the original German performed at that Music and Theater Conservatory by my classmates. I was not allowed to be in it as American. It's a political thing or something like that. But it was a great opportunity to see that there. I was also a camp director at Camp Minnewanka in Western Michigan, working with ages 9 through 17-year-old boys for a couple years, which allowed me to have some really hands-on experience with some of the angst and some of the things that young people go through there. I went back and got my master in social work and public health from the University of Michigan. Now I'm a clinical social worker and health educator at the Corner Health Center. I also have a private practice with Integrative Empowerment Group and working with sexual minorities. And then I just put a couple funny pictures. That's me as Oberon in Shakespeare in the Arb. So you know I've got some really Ann Arbor credentials there. And then that's me at camp right there. So, all right, it's just a little bit about me. Wanted to talk briefly about my work with the Corner Health Center's theater troupe. So what we do is we go out and bring important health topics out to school. Right here we have Brianna, Dez, and Max performing at the Youth Voice Conference over in Flint. And what we do is we think about important health topics. We have a troupe of about 10 to 12 young people. And we ask them, what's important to you? What are you thinking about? What are your teens or what are your peers talking about? And from that, we develop a play, and then we go out with that play and we present it to schools. So right now, we're touring to pretty much every school in the Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti school districts. We're touring us a HIV prevention play, a depression awareness play, and we just world premiered a play about transgender bullying and helping people understand a little bit about what it means to be transgender and some of the harsh hardships that young person who's transgender faces. So again, this is important work. I think it's really wonderful to combine social justice with theater. I would not be here if I did not believe that. So that's a little bit about the Corner Health Center's theater troupe. So I'd like to take a minute to tell you a little bit about the history of Spring Awakening. So this is a picture from the original New York production. So it's written by Benjamin Franklin, Frank Wedekind, 1891 in Germany. And as I bet you can tell from his name, his parents were a little counterculture in terms of 1891 Germany. The premiere performance was a couple years later, you can do the math, 15, on November 20th, 1906. So the play was so controversial, it was hard to get produced anywhere. Finally, 1906, Deutsches Theater in Berlin was the place where it was produced, premier performance. First stage in English, 1917 in New York City. So we have this wonderful play. I, in fact, learned of the play before the Broadway musical came out. I was studying it. I just really fell in love with it and just how honest it was in portraying the adolescents and how I felt like their needs, their wants, and how brutally honest it was at that point. Duncan Sheik and Steven Sater felt the same way, so they decided to create a musical from it. It had its premiere on December 10th, 2006, with an original Broadway production. Many stars had their start here. Rachel Berry, we always call her, but Leah Michelle. And Jonathan Groff, among others, won 8 Tony Awards. And one thing I love, I don't know if you all watched Tony's, not this year, but the past year, there was a Spring Awakening performance from the 2015 revival with deaf and hearing actors performed in English and American Sign Language simultaneously. That was really an amazing thing to think about the voicelessness of teenagers and how that translated to the stage. So my main section of the talk here is what subjects present and play are relevant to. I kind of fell in love with these two pictures too, so I use them on a lot more slides. So you've got the young woman in Germany back in the 1800s, and then the latte in this phone just really spoke to me here. So so I'm going to go back and forth between what's being talked about in the play and what I'm seeing today. So in the play, talk a little bit about adolescence. So teenagers in the play are not trusted. That's my main thing that I'm seeing when I think about the play. The adults don't trust them to do what they say they're going to do. They don't trust them to make decisions on their own. The adults often feel like the information they provide will be permission for the young person to engage in that information, especially around sexuality. You know, sexuality is very much repressed here. And the adults believe that, you know, if we talk to them about it, if they learn about it, they're going to go ahead and do it, so we better not say anything. They want the adolescents to act like adults, but they don't give them the voice to do though, and they just don't trust them to do what's best. So Frau Bergmann, who is Wendla's, the main character's mother, this is Act 1, Scene 1, the first scene of the play. Wendla asks Frau Bergmann, where do babies come from, basically, is the main question she asked. And this is Frau Bergmann's kind of winding response here. For a woman to bear a child, she must, in her own personal way, you can hear her stumbling over her words here, she must love her husband, love him as she can only love him. Only him she must love with her whole heart. There, now you know everything. You might imagine this leads to complications later in the play when the young men who were much more educated around the mechanics of sexuality and the anatomy of sexuality, in fact, Melchior writes Moritz a whole primer on this, but Wendla is given only this information when it comes to sexuality. Today in adolescence, I think we're doing better. There's a gathering movement to build youth voice. The Neutral Zone right here in Ann Arbor has a really great youth-driven spaces initiative where they and we are trying to get as many youth in positions of leadership and power as they can. So I think that's great. That goes a long way to trusting. But many adults still feel like any information we provide will be permission to give young people permission to engage in that activity. You know, the examples I like to give around this is it's still against Michigan law to distribute contraception in school property, on school grounds. So as a health educator, I cannot bring condoms onto school grounds. The in-school health clinics cannot prescribe birth control. This is still a Michigan state law. So again, it's one of those things that we don't necessarily trust young people with that information and resources in that because we feel like it'll give them permission. Another thing that I like to talk about is Gardasil. It is a vaccine. It is one of the more controversial vaccines because it does prevent a sexually transmitted infection, but it also prevents that sexually transmitted infection from turning into cancer later in the time. Another thing we've learned recently is the adolescent brain continues growing and changing up to age 25, which is why I always like to talk to our interns. I'm like, you know you're still an adolescent, right? So that's kind of fun to say. But we know there's still some growth and change, and there's been a lot of interesting studies about things that can affect this process. Like a lot of people talk about how alcohol can really, binge drinking especially, can really damage that growing brain. So I like to tell a couple stories about what's normal and not normal for a teenager. One of my patients talked about, their parent actually talked to me, and they were like, wow, my 13-year-old really doesn't want to hug and kiss me goodnight anymore. I'm like, you know, that's pretty normal, right? That's something that happens. You know, they want to have independence. They want to go launch out and explore new places, explore new things. They want to try to launch out. So it's pretty normal that your young person doesn't have that same level of affection anymore. And if the young person did, sometimes I feel like there might be something. I might look at it as a diagnostic thing. Talking about in the play, sexuality. So if you don't know, and you're planning on going to see the show on Friday, there's many different examples of young people figuring out their sexuality. There's a masturbation scene, there's a same-sex couple scene, and there's a scene with two of the main characters that may or may not be consensual. In the original German play, it was billed as a rape. In this one, it's more consensual, but there's still a question there of whether it's not. Hanschen and Ernst are the two characters that explore their sexuality in a same-sex relationship, which I find really interesting because in the original play, as well as in this one, it's kind of matter-of-fact. It's like these two characters, they have this beautiful experience and we don't hear from them ever again. They're, you know, it's shown without consequence, without fanfare or consequence. It's just shown very normal. I'm wondering if that's something that was so controversial in 1891. So Wendler says, Melky, no, it's just, what, sinful? No, I don't know. Then why? Because it's good? Because it makes us feel something? So it's really, I think in this point, it's really about the emotions, but it's also, I don't know why feel was in quotes in the script there. I can only conjecture that they were going for the multiple meaning of feel, both emotions and physical pleasure. And good is something that comes up very rarely when we talk about teenage sexuality. And I think it's an important topic to have. One of the things I always talk about that doesn't often get talked about in school sex ed is pleasure and things feeling good. And so I think it's very important that no matter how uncomfortable it is, that we're able to talk about that. So let's talk about sexuality today. So youth today feel much more comfortable expressing their sexuality and finding out their sexual identity. So like we talked about, there's still a double standard. But I really feel like a lot of the young people I talk to are able to express to me, well, this is the type of person I'm attracted to. Or a growing number of young people are saying, you know what, I'm asexual. I don't feel sexual attraction. I still feel romantic attraction. But I don't necessarily feel sexual attraction. So that's a growing thing. But they also talk about being pansexual, bisexual. Some words that I've never even heard before. And I have to ask, what does that mean to you? Or I have to look it up on Urban Dictionary or Google. Demisexual is an interesting one, too. I think that means you're attracted to someone because of their intelligence. But I learn new words pretty much every single day. But it can still be a battle to get the necessary info to young people, again, because of that lack of trust. We talked about sexuality. I'm also seeing a lot of young people who express their gender identity in different ways. A growing number of young people would like to be referred to with the pronoun they, which is, you know, with the English grammar that has been drilled into me since grade school, has been a shift, but I do it out of respect to them. So a young person who wants to be called they, I've become much more comfortable using they as a singular pronoun. And it's just part of their identity. They'd like to identify outside of the binary, and I think it's very important to respect young people in that. So when I teach sex education, I have a phrase called make love, not porn, because a lot of young people these days with their easy access to pornography are getting their sex education from pornography. And so what I tell them, and this gets a laugh usually out of the young people, is that learning to have sex by watching porn is like learning how to drive by watching The Fast and the Furious. It's not exactly something you want to do. It's more for entertainment, it's for action, it's for stimulation. So we want to make sure that young people are getting more accurate information than the stuff they're getting from pornography. This is a really interesting slide because when I go out to classrooms with the plays, especially with the HIV plays, a lot of young people are like, well, everyone's getting pregnant. You know that, right? Like, it's worse than it ever has been. And then I like to bring out this slide. So this is teen pregnancies ages 15 through 19. The number, this is in Washtenaw County from 2010 to 2014. And it's gone steadily down. And if you look at a long-term data, I looked all the way back to 1992, it is a steady decrease in teen pregnancies in Washtenaw County. And I hope it's because we're getting the word out there a little more about protection and birth control. Maybe young people have more distracting things to do. Maybe there's easier access to pornography. I don't know. Maybe they're too much on their phones to try to engage in sex. I don't know what this is about, but I really like bringing out the slide and talking to people about how the birth rate for teens, or at least pregnancies for teens ages 15 through 19, has gone down. So we're going to talk a little bit about abuse in the play. Two of the characters, Marta and Ilsa, talk about how people in their lives have physically and sexually abused them. Like I said, it's a very heavy play with some really tough topics. After that, Venla becomes curious about what that's like and asks Melchior to beat her with a stick. And again, that curiosity is something we talked about a lot, that exploring, that experimentation. I don't know if this is sexual curiosity or just a normal curiosity when it comes to Venla, but it could be either of those things. And there's a really powerful song that Marta and Ilsa get to sing together. In the original German play, Marta is a very minor character, just has one line that gets kind of swept under the rug. But in this one, Marta and Ilsa get to sing a song called The Dark I Know Well. And it has some very powerful lyrics. You know, they say all you want is just a kiss goodnight. Then you hold me and whisper, child, the Lord won't mind. It's just you and me, child, you're a beauty. And they're talking about their abuser in this case. So it's a very powerful number. The two young people who sang it really talked about tapping into emotions without trying to get too deep into it when I talked with the cast. Talking about abuse today, though, in Washtenaw County, confirmed victims of abuse and neglect was 10.7 out of 1,000 children, which in Washtenaw County is the fifth lowest in the counties in the state. Same in out-of-home care to abuse or neglect, 2.3 per 1,000. Again, these are good numbers. Obviously, we'd like to see it closer to zero, but these are pretty good numbers. I'd like to talk a little bit about abuse warning signs. So there are certain recognizable physical or behavioral indicators of abuse and neglect. So obviously, if someone has bruises, welts, or burns, it cannot be sufficiently explained. Withdrawn, fearful, extreme behavior. Or injuries where children don't normally get injured. And then signs of sexual abuse, difficulty walking or sitting, really anything unusual involving the genitals. But the more emotional things for sexual abuse can be feeling threatened by physical contact, frequent sex play, premature understanding of sex. And then we even talk about signs of emotional abuse, which is sleeping problems, inability to play, speech disorders, behavioral extremes, or delays in emotional or intellectual growth. And finally, neglect. You see this often as lack of medical or dental care, lack of supervision, so young children left unattended. And then really, they just don't have their basic needs met, so nutrition, shelter, and then if their parents are drug or alcohol abuse. So one thing you can do if you suspect abuse or neglect is call this number anytime, day or night. It allows you to report abuse or neglect of any child or adult. We actually had an interesting conversation with the cast because one of the younger members of the cast, when talking about that song, talked about how she really identified with it. And the director came to me and said, do we need to report someone something? And I said, well, let's just have a conversation with her and see about what's happening. And that conversation has happened, and I think we're good. But it's very important to be sensitive to these things and watch out for these things. Want to touch on real quickly the power and control wheel. Some of you might have seen this, but this is for, in a heterosexual relationship, oftentimes the man has a lot of power, and he uses that in ways to control the other partner. And these are some of the different ways beyond physical, actual violence, or sexual violence, that he can use to intimidate. And this is a very powerful tool that a lot of people use when educating about this with young people, just talking about, hey, just because that person is not hitting doesn't mean that they're not using some form of power and control with their partner. I actually had a person I worked with when I worked in Detroit who used to say, you know, he's not really abusing me because he never punches me, but he does choke me until I pass out. And I'm like, that is a form of abuse. So it's very important to be specific and ask about all sorts of different things when you're dealing with people who might be in this situation. Finally, the last topic I'd like to cover here is suicide. This is a very relevant topic. We've had, I'll show you in a little bit, just how many people complete suicide. That is the new language, by the way. We've moved from commit suicide to complete suicide. I don't exactly know the impetus for that. I just know I like to be exact in my language and to use the most up-to-date language. So complete suicide is the new term that we're, or the new phrase that we're using. So, spoilers, one of the characters in the play ends their life in the second act by shooting themselves. The reason this character does it is because they feel like there's no escape from the failure and discipline he's encountered in school. Another character contemplates ending their life after they find out their friend has done it. And this is really interesting because Herr Knochenbruch, which means bone breaker, basically, is the headmaster of the school, and he says, we must take immediate and decisive steps lest we be perceived as one of those institutions afflicted by the veritable epidemic of adolescent suicide. So that kind of, when I read that, it kind of rang true for me today. Because today, we've had a drastic spike in adolescent suicides. So in 2009, just going to share some statistics here, the number of 15 to 24-year-olds completing suicide in Washtenaw County was 6. So in 2010 to the present, you notice we're not even to the same amount of years. We've had 32. So that's a real reason that I am so passionate about this topic. I actually joined there's a coalition called the Washtenaw Alive Coalition, which is made up of organizations and individuals who are passionate about preventing more suicides in the Washtenaw County area. And we meet quarterly to brainstorm. There's actually going to be a billboard that we just put up on 94. When you're getting off of the Ypsilanti exit, it says, are you okay? And then it gives you the text helpline, which is something I'm going to share with you in just a minute. But there's a lot of interventions that we're trying to make sure that this spike doesn't continue. So what can you do? Share the resources that I'm going to share with you today. So the crisis text line is a great one. A lot of young people, believe it or not, are more comfortable texting someone than actually calling someone. So the crisis text line, 24 hours a day, gives folks a place to text. So if they just type into their phone 741-741 and send a help text or a hello text, really anything, there are trained crisis line counselors at the other end of that line texting them back in a way that's going to help them. And the other nice thing I like about the crisis text line is they do anonymously save all of their texts. So they have data from around the country that shows us when young people were interested or talking about this topic, what time of day, what time of year, what state. It's really interesting data that I think as more and more people start to use this, we'll kind of suss out when are important times to be watching out for these sort of crises. And they also identify what kind of crisis was it. Was it stress of school? Was it thoughts of suicide? Was it depression? Was it anxiety? So this is a really great resource for the young people in our community. We've got this wonderful hospital right down the road. U of M Psychiatric Emergency Service Crisis Line right there. We also have Ozone House. So this is for homeless and runaway youth. But any young person, pretty much anyone, can call this number, and that crisis line is staffed, and they'll connect you with that number as well. So a couple numbers to get people where they need to be. That's the National Crisis Hotline, 273-TALK. It's an 800 number. I'm actually trained in suicide prevention by an organization called Living Works. This is a place out of Canada. And there's two programs. There's Safe Talk, which is basic. It's an 8-hour training for basic mental health first aid and how to identify and start that conversation with someone who is contemplating suicide. And then ASSIST is Advanced Suicide Intervention Tactics, basically. And so I highly recommend this program if you are interested in learning more about that, because SafeTalk is a really nice way to help people figure out the best way to intervene when someone's thinking about suicide. The one thing that they taught me was the best thing to do is ask directly, honestly, because so many people can be scared of that answer. Are you thinking of killing yourself? It's such a hard thing to say to someone when you've got someone in pain in front of you, but oftentimes that can open up the door for a much deeper conversation. So ask that question, listen to what they have to say after, if they say yes or if they say no. Listen to what they have to say, because they're definitely in crisis, and then connect them to one of these resources. So that's my little brief. I probably wasn't allowed to do that, but I'm just going to give that freebie away from LivingWorks. Finally, there are mental health first aid workshops coming up in Washtenaw County. There's a couple coming up in September and a couple coming up in December. And these are really great ways for you, your organization, folks in your community to learn more about mental health first aid. And that includes suicide prevention and that first step in suicide prevention. September and December. There it is. In addition, there is, because of that spike in suicides, there is a task force from Washtenaw County Public Health specifically tasked to figure out what can we do as a community to come together and help prevent more suicides from happening. So in December of 2016, the Washtenaw County Suicide Death Review Team put together 10 recommendations, and I'm just going to go through them quickly with you all for suicide prevention and intervention. The first one, and they grouped them into categories, so this is first one for public health, community, schools, and families. They would like us to improve the social support, especially for those with mental health challenges. And what I like to talk about with young people is there's so much opportunity for isolation today. I talk to young people who are staying at home, working on their computer, oftentimes, not working, but interacting with their friends on their computer, whether they've met them in real life or not. They're playing video games. They're staying at home. So social support, I see that as both for those people who don't feel comfortable leaving the house, maybe get some internet support, but also I think it's really valuable to have groups like the Teen Pre-Education Theater Troupe, like Neutral Zone is a great example, like Ozone House's drop-in center, so places where young people can go and get that social support, especially for those with mental health challenges. Routine engagements for persons living with mental illness. We want to make sure that anyone who has depression or any sort of mental illness that might cause them to act impulsively and take their life, that we engage with them routinely, whether that's individual psychotherapy, whether that's groups, just more interaction with people who are dealing with mental illness. This is a nice long one. Evidence-based community or school-based depression prevention interventions, especially for youth in high-risk groups. So this is one of the reasons that we're going out to schools and talking about depression. We do bring up the subject of suicide in all of our depression plays, and we make sure that it's addressed and young people have the tools to talk to their peers about it. Again, evidence-based, we love this. This is a buzzword, we love it. Community resources that increase recognition of early warning signs of mental health concerns, an awareness of how to respond to a mental health crisis, and suicidal behavior. Again, mental health first aid training, like we talked about with LivingWorks or the Washtenaw County Mental Health First Aid. Assure that primary care clinicians have the resources needed to adequately assess and link patients to needed therapy, with special emphasis on on-site consultation and treatment. This is why I love the Corner Health Center in Roz is another great example. We are school-based and school-linked health centers that have mental health and physical health in the same building. We actually talk to each other. We actually chart on the same charts. So it's very important to me that that kind of integrated health happens as much as possible. I love it when a doctor at our clinic or a provider at our clinic pages, we have what we call Social Worker of the Day, or SWOD, and they page the SWOD, and I come down, and I can meet someone who's maybe struggling and have a really quick crisis conversation with them and say, hey, why don't you come back and meet with me once a week and we can get that started. We do have a wait list right now, so it doesn't exactly happen like that. That's how I'd like it to happen ideally. So they're sitting right there in the exam room, and they get to talk to a social worker. So that's what I feel like having primary care clinicians access to those resources. If not an in-house social worker, I think a training, some sort of more training on how what to do when this comes up would also be good. This is a big one. Increased number of psychiatrists and therapists, especially child and adolescent psychiatrists. You know, there, as many wonderfully trained doctors we're pumping out of this university, we still need more child and adolescent psychiatrists. We were looking for a psychiatric nurse practitioner who wants to work with adolescents, and my aunt, who's a psychiatric nurse practitioner, said, well, good luck. Good luck to that. So if you know people who want to work with children and adolescents, that is gold. That is wonderful. Encourage them to go into psychiatry. Sure access to evidence-based mental health treatment and intervention. Again, we just want to make sure that people know their resources are out there and are accessing them. Improve access to costly psychotropic medication. This gets into a whole policy debate that is happening nationwide right now, but I am a firm believer in making sure that people have access to these medications. Mental health urgent care and respite care resources for adults and youth. Again, making sure that, you know, the U of M psych ward is able to handle that, but let's make sure that all urgent care are able to help youth in crises or anyone in crises. And finally, improving access to adequate and effective substance use disorder treatments, because substance use goes hand in hand with suicidality. And this is so great. I just want to leave you with this parting thought. So I had the pleasure of going to see one of our theater troupe members. She had written and directed a play, and they produced it at the Riverside Arts Center in Ypsilanti. It's a huge process. I can't believe she's doing it. She's about to start at the U of M directing BFA in the fall. And she had this as her director's note, and I asked her permission to quote it because I just felt like it was so appropriate here. So I'm just going to read it to you really quickly. You can read it with me. So she said, how do we deal with the heavy things? How do we deal with the things that suck the oxygen out of the room, that rest on our shoulders night and day? I think that through the course of this show, I've come to the following conclusion. I don't know how to deal with the heavy stuff. Things like loss, grief, and heartbreak are all still too new to me to have a concrete solution. But what I do know is that theater allows us to work through the tough stuff. Theater lets us cry and scream and let it all out on the stage and leave it there. When we approach these subjects with the honesty of theater, both those of us on stage and off, actors and audience alike, get to hash it out and feel without shame. At the end of the night, we can walk away from it and leave whatever we found on the stage. So how do we deal with the heavy things? We find them, we feel them, and we keep moving forward. Thank you, and enjoy the show. So that was Kelly M. Beck, the artistic director of Phoenix Theater Productions, 19 years old. So thank you so much for having me. I'm just going to leave you with that.